Frank Reeder is my guest, talking about his list of the top three for 2013. First on your list, Frank, is one that I have not seen a whole lot of discussion on, but I imagine it's something we'll have to think a lot more about. That's the domestic use of drones and the growth of surveillance. Do you expect this to be a year where more of that happens, or just where we start to think about it more and become aware of the possibilities more?
Well, interesting. It wasn't on my screen, forgive the pun, until a couple of weeks ago when a story ran, I forgot it, either in the Post or the Times, that the FAA had postponed establishing several air traffic control centers for domestic drones. From an air safety standpoint, of course, these little suckers up there are potential debris in the airspace, if you will, that could interfere with passenger and other travel. So the FAA's concern is one of air traffic safety. But they put a hold on deploying these centers. I'm not sure where they're to be located, pending the development of privacy guidelines, some sort of guidelines on how and where they may be used. So from the FAA standpoint, this is a real here and now question. I guess I hadn't appreciated the extent to which civil authorities of various sorts are considering deploying drones for a variety of things. Of course, the privacy concerns, if we think about how the Brits are now using cameras on the streets, if we go one step beyond that and think of eyes in the sky surveilling, it's an issue that requires attention, and the FAA obviously thinks is sufficiently current that they've shed some light on it.
Will this require, do you think, a major rethinking of the concept of privacy? Because my assumption is if I'm out and about in a public space, then I guess I consider myself to have abdicated my right to privacy. If I'm going to stand and hold up my hand in the middle of the city and people see it, well, people are going to see that, and there's not much that I can really do about it.
Well, it's an interesting philosophic question whether de facto we have all given up our right to be free of surveillance, if you will. In any time we're in a public space, you know, whether it's the dude who bought the lottery ticket in the 7-Eleven that everybody thought was a big winner a couple of weeks ago, who suddenly was splashed all over the screens of at least local TV because there was a thought that he might have bought it. I mean, who knows? His angry wife may say, "You mean you were out buying a lottery ticket when you were someplace else?" To that extent, I'm not even prepared to mount that argument. Eyes in the sky don't distinguish between public and private spaces. How about your backyard? The cameras at least are put in relatively fixed locations. So even for the moment, conceding the assertion that whenever you're in a public space, you're no longer free from surveillance. I'm not sure you're giving up your right to privacy, but you're certainly no longer free from surveillance. When you're, forgive the imagery here, sunbathing nude in your backyard, does that now become, if you will, an area where you're subject to being viewed without a warrant or some, you know, having met some legal standard of probable cause to surveil where you are?
Dan Garay of the Lexington Institute told me in an interview a little while back that the technology that is involved with drones is going to become, like other technology, sufficiently easy to get and sufficiently cheap that it's conceivable that private citizens could buy this technology and it just see what's going on with their neighbors and friends and so on, whatever they wanted to do. Is this an area that is going to require, do you think, a lot more complex study and a lot more complex policymaking?
Oh, absolutely. But I think The initial threat, I mean, I watched my grandchildren open their Christmas presents and looked at all the remote control aerial and ground-based devices that are now part of their arsenal. And it's not hard to imagine sticking a cheap camera on that. And as you say, at least snooping over the back fence, if not more intrusive kinds of surveillance. For the moment, though, I think the immediate issue is what right public entities have, institutions of government. And if we get that one right, then I think what follows in the private sector or actions, private actions, will be a little bit easier to deal with.
The second point on your list of top three for 2013, Frank, is the concept of censorship on the internet. And you cite a court case where negative reviews on some review websites had to be taken off under court order. What kind of implications does that have, do you think, for crowdsourcing and especially for the federal government's drive toward crowdsourcing and public comment and so on through the internet?
Well, I mean, again, we've thus far viewed the blogosphere, including crowdsourcing, as pretty much unconstrained, except perhaps for, and I haven't seen any cases on point being subject to laws governing libel and slander. But this is a really peculiar case in which a local court, one of the suburban counties in Washington, actually directed an individual to pull a review off, I think it was Yelp and Angie's List, because the individual alleged not only that the service provided was inadequate, but that the service provider's staff had stolen something, or at least something was missing after they left. And the ACLU, interestingly enough, is now challenging the case. So the implications of this for something that is very valuable to all of us, both in the public sector and in our private activities, as you say, being able to crowdsource, is interesting. On one hand, there's a powerful argument to be made that absent meeting some pretty high standard, there shouldn't be any prior restraint on speech of any sort. At the same time, we can see how serious damage can be done at a minimum right now to commercial interests, but I can see it happening to private interests. So I don't know how this plays out, but it, again, what looked to me to be a little case is suddenly, I think, becoming a much larger case, and I think we're going to see a lot of discussion of how one continues, how one preserves the right of expression without causing sort of this pretty serious collateral damage to individuals who may be the object of that expression.
Frank Reeder talking about his top three for 2013, domestic use of drones and censorship on the internet, his first two. And Frank, your third and final one is federal program curtailment and workforce reductions because of what we're seeing about the fiscal cliff now. The fiscal cliff is potentially a bump in the road, but I don't think anybody will argue now that budgets won't be tight for the foreseeable future. So this isn't just a short term, we'll make it through this couple of months or this year issue. This is a long term potential structural issue in the federal government, don't you think?
Absolutely. And that's the larger point. I think one way or another, we'll figure our way out of the immediate problem of dealing with the tax cuts and the sequestration the debt ceiling increase, which will be required sometime in the first 60 days of the year. Regardless of the outcome of that, they're not going to fix the real problem. And the political pressures are enormous, essentially because folks on one side refuse to address the revenue side, and folks on the other side are unwilling to address what is really the structural problem on the spending side, which is healthcare costs. If you look at what's happening to healthcare costs as a percentage of the GDP, and since through Medicare and Medicaid, the federal taxpayer picks up a pretty big chunk of healthcare costs, and until we have a serious conversation about that, or allow ourselves to have a serious conversation about that, the pressure then focuses on discretionary spending and predominantly domestic discretionary spending. And, you know, even if you wiped out the discretionary budget, it wouldn't make a difference in the larger structural problem. Yet that's where the political system wants to look, and that is directly jobs both for federal contractors and federal employees.
The structural issues at agencies are something, I mean, that's, we've called Social Security the third rail for a long time, but it strikes me that that's our community's third rail, because even Secretary Panetta, when talking about sequestration, said we're going to figure out everything else that we can possibly figure out before we have to do anything regarding civilian personnel at the Pentagon, whether it's furloughs or layoffs, any of that. And every other agency that I'm hearing about is saying pretty much the same thing. Is it fair to say that if we get to that point in 2013, that means that we're really down to the bone at these agencies, and that this is a really a new normal? This is something like something we've never seen before?
Well, unless folks are willing to engage in an adult conversation about what the real drivers are, I think that's exactly where we're going to be. And, you know, in Secretary Panetta's words, everything else also entails jobs. As we well know, especially in this area, cutting everything else first means buying stuff, and stuff very often, a substantial chunk of the procurement budget translates also into jobs. So we're not just talking about eliminating federal employees, but significant impact on contractor employment.